This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. It is exactly 9 minutes past 11. And today in the business show, we've got a slightly different angle. We usually talk about hardcore business-related things, economic-related things. But sometimes there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that we don't even realize. If any of you have ever worked in the food industry or in the manufacturing industry, you'd understand how important air quality control is, how contaminant control is, and that just a doubt about whether something unhealthy is in the air or has got into a production facility can cause the entire place to be shut down. And it's not a case of just, you know, closing the mall, for example, and making sure that bag has been checked and there's nothing suspicious in it. It's about where that contaminant could have got into. And I'm speaking here more specifically about birds. Pigeons are those typical South African sounds that we know, together with the hardy-dar, where, you know, you just know the morning has arrived or it's something that you hear in the background. But when you've had a pigeon infestation and they are roosting in your roof and they are walking around when you're trying to sleep, or they are dropping droppings on your ceiling and are starting to seep through, the sight, the smell, besides being unhealthy, is emotionally destabilizing. You can actually go out of your mind from this noise. And if you've ever seen where it becomes really rampant, there are just piles of bird waste all over the show. The noise is intolerable. The sound, the bickering, the wings flapping. And that's just in the resident. If you're thinking about a place that is making food or processing food, a bird that could get in, that could be dropping its waste in certain areas, really becomes a major, major challenge. Besides that, we also know that, you know, for example, Trafalgar Square in London is well known for its pigeons, and Mary Poppins really capitalized on that little scene over there. But if you go to Trafalgar Square today, there are almost no pigeons. And feeding the pigeons is not something that's encouraged or even allowed. And that's simply because pigeons in a urban area are really becoming a major problem and have been for many years. Besides that, in third world countries, they are eaten, and they're called squab or squab, however you want to pronounce it. And if they're, you know, raised in a correct way as animals or birds that are going to be consumed, that's one thing. But urban birds carry a lot of pests. They carry heavy metals within their bodies from eating different things that are not healthy. And they're really just not the type of animal that you want around. They're basically flying rats. And before all the tree huggers get all excited and get all nervous, we need to get this absolute balance that is so important. None of us want to go out there killing animals. But if it's a choice of killing rats or mice, or your baby getting bitten, or even limbs being infected, like we see in certain townships, things have to be taken under control. We all have heard the stories from the First World War, and it carried on to the Second World War, where rats grew the size of cats, and they would throw cats into the trenches to eat the rats, and nature has reversed itself. We don't want to get there. And we know that a place like Alexandra Township has a huge amount of density and has a huge population. It has a sanitation that's certainly not up to scratch. It's a kilometer from Sandton. It's 7 kilometers from where I used to live. And without being disparaging, it is so important that pests are controlled in an area where they can really become a danger to the whole city. And that was a long enough introduction, but it gives me great pleasure to welcome Dion from Staden, from Servest. Dion, what do you think of my intro? Did I sum it up correctly?
Avi, thanks for having me, and I must say, very well summed up. You definitely did a lot of research on this subject.
I did some research on the scrab, but thanks to chat, I just wanted to go and see if people still eat it because I had heard that it was a delicacy. But Dion, I just know from myself, there is, if we separate the residential and maybe the commercial areas as the two different areas, pigeons, Indian miners, which I don't think you're allowed to call them Indian miners, I think you've got to call them Asian miners these days, are real pain in the butts. They're wonderful when they're in your garden and they, drinking water from your swimming pool or the bird bath. But when they're in your roof, it becomes a major, major problem. How do you guys have as service, all the way back? How's your technology developed from when you started to where you are now to sort of bring this under control?
I've been in the pest control business for over 30 years, and birds have always been our nightmare. It was difficult to control. You would have remembered those little domes on all the buildings, and
Yes.
then to keep birds away from buildings, but then you got the birds sitting on the domes, spinning around. So we've had many things. I think eventually we've come to a point is you need an integrated approach. One solution doesn't work. So what we've developed is a scenario of multiple techniques to make the areas uncomfortable and stressful for the birds, from flying hawks and birds of prey. We've got falconers now, and a nice hawk we call the Hudson Hawk that comes in from America. If he flies around, everything disappears. All birds scatter. We've got little falcons that we send into warehouses that are small enough to be able to fly with the sparrows in those beams. And the sparrows are petrified of this little hawk and get out of those areas, especially if you can set, like you said, food production. It's very cramped in there. And the sparrows know that they are not scared of a big hawk coming in because it's inside. So we've learned to push little hawks in there. We've got laser systems running now that we've brought in from Amsterdam and even developing within South Africa. And we've got a multiple array of uses now for that as well. So it's not just one solution, Avi. It's actually a combination of everything from dogs to bird proofing to hawks to even a scarecrow at times. Our scarecrow has just evolved. It's not a scarecrow anymore. It's gel pods we use that for the bird's eye, it looks like a fire. So they avoid those areas because it looks like there's a fire burning. So we make the areas very uncomfortable and stressful for them to keep them out.
Dion, I'm just listening to you talk and just reading the press release and doing some background research. I've got a problem here with swallows. They come into the garage, and on top of my car, I've got one of those hydrant things that if there's a fire, and this bird sits on this thing and it uses my car as target practice. And I've hung things and it goes away for a couple of days or a couple of weeks. But my latest little trick was I hung some red duct tape. So it was just above the spout because I didn't want to get in, I didn't want to block it. But the birds have now learned that that duct tape can just be pushed aside and it's sitting there again. So the term bird brain as a derogatory thing is not entirely true. They're far cleverer and more adaptive than I would have thought. And is that what makes them so challenging as a pest?
Exactly like you're saying, Avi. They evolve very quickly because if there's a nesting point where they feel comfortable or there's a food source, they don't care. They will make a plan to be in that area. So there's not one solution. And unfortunately, right on top of your car, that droppings is a corrosive to your vehicle. It actually damages your paint. So I have solutions for you, Avi. I'm going to actually send them to you. So we're going to use gel pods and multiple of things. But the idea is to make the area very stressful for them not to come into. Not just one solution, use everything you can to your disposal.
John, let's look at some of the techniques that have been used in the past. And here I'm picturing in my mind's eye, where I used to live in South Africa, there was a block of flats on the corner, and these guys tried everything. They had those hexagon spinning things, and
Yes.
it worked for a period, I don't know how long. And then next thing you would see the bird sitting right next to it. It had a very sharp point, so they couldn't sit on top. How does the bird realize that this thing, even though when it catches the sun at the right angle, it will give off an emission of light? How does the bird realize that this thing's not a problem?
I think they get used to in that environment. So on a triangle you're talking about, they figured out if they come from the bottom up, that there's no reflection. So instead of flying high up and coming down, they're going from the bottom upwards. In terms of the spikes, that made very good nests.
Diona, we need, as you see, we just need to stop for an ad break, but I want to come back to the spikes because I've actually seen them in action, and I just want to get your opinion on that. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 FM. This is the Avi on Money show. It is 22 minutes past 11. And coming back to our guest, Dion from Staden from Servest. We are talking about the control of birds as pests. Dion, the Western Wall in Jerusalem is a world-famous landmark, but it has its own unique pigeon, a white dove, that flies around. There's two or three of them, but they have a problem with pigeons, and they've put up these spikes. You can imagine it being a very old structure with lots of crevices and cracks. And every conceivable place they have put these spikes. And I'm often amazed when you look up. I know I should be thinking about other things when I'm there, but I sometimes notice that these birds have somehow adapted to these very treacherous mechanisms that have been put in there. They do serve a point, but have the spikes themselves had to evolve? As the bird became more comfortable with it in its environment.
I mean, we as ourselves have moved totally away from the spikes because it's a lot of maintenance. The spikes catch debris as well. When the winds are blowing, the paper goes and sits in there. The bird doesn't see a spike anymore. It sees a nesting point. It catches leaves and everything. So you have to maintain that constantly and clean them out. So it is, for the effort, not very effective in our opinion. So personally, I've moved away totally from spikes, and that's why I'm using more the birds of prey, because it's a natural predator for them. So when the birds of prey are in those areas, they remove themselves from those areas automatically. And if you do it consistently, they will not come into that area. We do it especially on airports. Keep on those birds of prey running that areas. They kind of become a barrier of uncomfortable and stressful environment for them, so they stay away. So I know the spikes has its place, but unfortunately the maintenance of it also has to be continuous on those spikes.
That's so fair. That's really a practical point. Let's talk about these birds because this is something that is ancient. We know, if you watch the Lawrence of Arabia sort of type of movie, you're going to see the big leather glove and the little tuppy over the hawk's head and et cetera, et cetera. The bottom line is when we talk about using hawks, are the hawks there to scare away the bird, the other pair of birds, make it stressful, or are they actually preying on the birds?
It's more a scenario of making it stressful for them. These falcons and hawks are trained. So yes, sometimes we've had them actually attack a pigeon or sparrow. It unfortunately does happen. It's in its nature. But the best effect we try and do is let them fly the areas just to make the area stressful for the rest of the birds. So the intention is not for them to strike any pigeons or sparrows, if it does happen, it does happen. It's nature. But the main idea is to make that environment uncomfortable and stressful for pigeons and sparrows, just to stay out of that barrier area. So the falcons are trained to circle only a certain area as well.
You know, Dion, we live in an environment where people are so conscious of everything around them and trying to always say the correct thing, or God forbid they should slip up and say what is honest in an incorrect way. But we, even you and I are pussyfooting around the issue of saying that we are going to kill pigeons in order to stop the possible infestation of our food sources or of our airports. You know, the famous movie about Captain Scully landing his plane on the Hudson, that was a bird strike which was unavoidable. I know here in Israel, for example, the Air Force has learned the migratory patterns of birds and have learned to fly and train in different ways. Planes approach airports in different directions at different times of year in order to make sure that they don't interfere with nature. You know, if one or two or more than that pigeons are culled, so to speak, in the process, but we make sure that every time somebody's landing in Joburg International or Lanseria is safe, or Cape Town International, I think that's far more important than creating a pattern of discomfort for pests, where a few of them, you know, might get culled in the process. But using that term cull, which is a nice way of saying killing them, is that ever an option in an area? Let me just qualify that. For example, in Eastern Transvaal, in the Blader Canyon, they tried everything with the baboons. And eventually the only thing to do was to cull the entire troop. And then the problem stopped.
Unfortunately, you're quite right, Albie. We are playing around with not saying it, but it is sometimes a necessary step to take. You've got overpopulations because, like you said, people are feeding these birds at like the Trafalgar Square. It becomes, they are populating. Cleaning and waste methods are not up to standard. So the birds are eating and populating in ways they shouldn't. Nature would have taken care of this overpopulations. So at a point, we do have to go into culling. It's our last step that we try, but at some point it has to take place, especially on golf courses. People love to see ducks, but the ducks actually damage the greens, for instance. So the greenkeeper doesn't want it. And at that point, you can't get rid of ducks. You have to keep the population under control. So culling has its place, but it must be done responsibly as well. We're quite mindful of that.
100%. And I was actually just looking at one of the pictures that came through, and it focuses on a pigeon clearly standing in a filthy road that's all broken up with a lot of litter and dirt in it. Has the pigeon population become more of a problem as our inner cities have decayed? You know, we can say it as it is. When I was much younger, going to Stur City in the middle of town to watch a movie was the done thing. I don't know if I would drive through there today. You know, it was spotless. It was where we went clothes shopping, et cetera, et cetera. Has that decay of the inner city, the lack of maintenance and hygiene, created a bigger problem for the surrounding areas?
Exactly that. I mean, it's not only a pigeon problem, it's also a rodent problem in those areas. Because if there's a food source, it will attract the wrong pests. And what we said, if hygiene and cleanliness is not there, there is disease. The Black Plague was resolved of rats because of hygiene issues. And I think we're going down that road by the look of it again. If we do not keep the areas hygienic and clean up these areas, the pests will not go away. They will increase and they will become much stronger in terms of populations and their techniques. I mean, even we got seagulls that will attack tourists at certain points because they become so wild.
Dion, you just put a smile on my face. Years ago, my wife and I were in a conference in Cape Town, and we were staying in the waterfront. I forget the name of the hotel, and the hotel had organized special kosher food for us, and it was like buffet style inside, and we were sitting on the deck outside, and there was a couple to our right, and we both went in to replenish whatever we were eating, and we came out, this couple was on the floor laughing, and we looked at them and said, like, what's so funny? They said, the moment you got up from your seats, your table got invaded. He said, look, there's nothing left. And they were so, it was just, I remember it was salmon and bread, just disappeared. But again, the other day, I'm in Israel at the moment, or I live in Israel, and we have a problem with those blackbirds, crows. It makes sitting outside in so certain urban areas very unpleasant, because they sit on the side waiting, and the moment they see a gap, they'll jump onto your table and take a sandwich. So these things need to be managed. Okay, let's look on the positive side. Lasers. Laser is a new technology. I remember when I first saw it at the RAND show, it was just an interesting, cute idea. But now it's part of surgery. It's part of industry. It's part of the way steel is cut and manufactured. How do you use it in an effective way?
So if you imagine agricultural landscapes, how large those fields are to maintain, we are finding that laser technology there is brilliant in terms of the type of laser. So the laser they're using is imported from the Netherlands. So it's a very strong laser at 900 Celsius, so we can't put it in people's eyes. But running it through the fields and using the hawks then as a secondary run through it, it makes, and that lasers, just the way it's programmed, maybe I must start there, it's now mimicking a cat movement. So it doesn't just roll, it has patterns we've learned to program into the laser movements. So they are, the birds think something is stalking them. And it's in fields like agriculture, much easier. In warehouses as well, we've got so many beams and obstructions. The laser has a way of bouncing off certain mirror areas we can put in. So lasers have evolved. The right type of laser, however, is where the question is. So we've been working on green laser lighting, and it's a very effective to our studies. I think we've got a 90% chase rate currently on the laser systems that will chase birds 90% of the time away.
Now, Dion, that's so interesting. Just to maybe give our listeners a personal perspective from myself, my family's involved in agriculture, and we have a vineyard. But a sister farm has two vineyards, and last season one of the vineyards was totally destroyed by Indian miners. Mm. We don't know why that one specifically. I think maybe the management level was a bit lower, and there were less people around all the time. It was a little bit more secluded, but these Indian miners decimated the vineyard. Just to give the listeners an idea, a vineyard the size of your park, you know, that you would take your kids to or something like that, costs in the region of about $500,000 to R700,000 just to set up before you start anything. So if you're waiting for a harvest, that harvest is so important because it's part of paying back that original seed capital. And you've already got a contract with the vintner and the winery for the harvest. If it's gone, the damage is really, really significant. And that's why laser and things like this, Dion, is almost imperative in modern farming.
Correct. To add on to you, I mean, we in South Africa, especially in Mpumalanga, have calculated 30% production losses because of just bird picking. So they don't even have to eat the whole fruit. They just have to pick that fruit, and that's a loss for the farmer. He can't sell it as an A-grade product anymore. And as you know, South Africa's biggest export is still fruits and vegetables, and that's a big loss for our farmers.
And again, for those who are worried about the birds themselves, an area like Mpumalanga, there's enough natural environment for them to prevent that. And if you look at a lot of the big citrus farmers now, they've gone to massive expenses of actually enclosing the entire citrus areas with shade cloth top and side, which is a massive expense. John, I just want to come back to something. I went on a bit of a tangent there. Why is it important to control birds at a landfill? You know, isn't a landfill just that? It's a big garbage dump, and let the birds have a field day. Why should we worry about them?
So, like you were saying in your opening, the parasites and the bacteria and bird droppings, because that bird is not going to stay there. It's going to come into a residential area to come nest. It won't nest necessarily in landfill sites, is what we find. And those bird droppings carry major diseases. I mean, the bacteria, you've got E. coli, you've got Salmonella, and you've got 115 types of parasites that can come out of the droppings themselves. Those droppings dry up, they become dust particles, and people inhale those. And it causes respiratory diseases for people. They don't realize it, but that's where a lot of those respiratory diseases come from, is bird droppings that's dried up and you're inhaling it. And in that kind of filth areas, you've got a lot of diseases brewing that the birds are picking up and getting into their systems. So keeping them away from those areas is just as important as from a hospital point of view. Because in hospitals, they go sit on the aircon units, and that aircon units actually suck the air in. So you've got bacteria being blown into hygienic areas.
No, it's definitely an ongoing problem, and it's become something that was very pleasant to see birds flying around, and it's something that definitely needs to be maintained and kept under control. But just before we quickly go to the break, just to maybe share with you something I saw the other day, just to show how technology is working. There's a lot of agriculture around where I live, and I saw like a very big truck just parked on the side of a field, and I stopped to watch. And what it is, it's drone pesticide. So instead of having your planes that fly low and spray, they're now doing it by drone. And I was thinking, like, okay, so why do they need such a big truck? Well, the drones are big, so. I mean, why is there a generator running? And this process is absolutely ingenious. The drones need batteries. So the generator charges the batteries. They've got this constant battery availability for the drones to work on. And all of a sudden, you haven't got people risking their lives diving these little planes up and down in between the telephone wires and electrical cables. And that's where technology has gone. But when we come back from the break, what I want to check you is just to break down the different types of hawks that we're using and the people who actually run it, because I think it's a different area of speciality. So let's take a quick break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 High FM. It's 19 minutes to 12. Dion, coming back to you, we've spoken about technology and all this wonderful thing, but the bottom line is that we know nature has always created its own cure. So how did you guys connect with using hawks and understand that there was the Harris hawk, the bigger one, the smaller one? How did this evolve for Servest?
It was actually done by chance. We met up with a company called Falcon Crest. They are very involved in falcons and birds of prey, and we had the technology and all the innovation, but like you said, nature was actually the best solution. So we've partnered up with the Falcon Crest Association, and they brought in the falcons for us and the birds of prey. And because we were so worried about this, it's not something we're quite good at, they are actually registered with BASA as well, which is the Bird Abatement Association of South Africa. And they're very, those hawks are and falcons are treated better than my dogs. And if you know my dogs, they cost me a fortune every month. These people really have a passion for looking after birds. And they are actually very passionate on not killing birds. So it's, they have the passion in terms of looking after the falcons and every technology that goes with it. And also, we are only allowed to fly the falcons in the morning or afternoon. They do not fly midday because of the heat. Falcons do not do well in those scenarios. They know this information, so teaming up with them was the right thing to do. But you laugh, and just before the break, you're alluding to it. We have now even developed a drone that looks like a falcon. And Falcon Chris has done this for us. So in the middays when we cannot fly falcons, we take the drones up and let the drones fly around. That gives the same impression like there's a falcon in the area, and it looks like a falcon.
Dion, I don't think that's ever happened to you in an interview before, that someone's grandson came crawling into his study. Would you mind taking the little man? Thank you. Sorry about that. My grandson came to visit. I just heard the pitter-patter behind me. Dion, but why aren't we using South African species?
We do use South African species. A lot of the falcons we do have are South African, the smaller ones especially. But for the hawks, we found the American one is much better in terms of being able to train them. The ones from Arabia, as your Israel, Iran, those kind of falcons have been evolved and bred to be able to train easier. So our birds of prey is, you know, we've got the eagles. We don't have so many falcon varieties in South Africa. So that's why we linked up with Falcon Crest, because they've got the species and they have the knowledge of which falcons work best. And I think they're a lot more drawn to the Middle East falcons because they are easier to be trained.
Now, Dion, I'm sure we've all seen pictures of many, many years ago, you know, the Bushveld time, where people tried to domesticate zebras and get them to pull wagons, and it was a total disaster. It's a wild animal that's not going to be domesticated. And whether you believe in evolution or not, the bottom line is that certain species have been bred generation after generation for specific areas. We're starting to run out of time, and I still haven't finished all the questions I wanted to ask you. How do the falcons work together with dogs? How does that coexistence work? Because as you said, there's the midday, there's obviously nighttime. How do we get all these different methods to work together?
So we do it in stages, Avi. You send the falcons in the morning out. As soon as the birds think the environment is safe again, that will be about midday, 12 o'clock, we send the dogs out. So, you know, there's a constant repetition of that something stressful coming into the environment. So the dogs and the falcons want to be done at the same time. And it gets split between time frames of when we'll use those kind of deterrents.
Someone has just asked you, I suppose that's a really good question, what species of dog is used? Do you know the answer to that?
I know they like using pointer dogs.
Okay.
But that's any kind of dog that's trainable, I think, yes, is used lately.
Okay. Dion, just before I let you go, you mentioned using robots and using self-propelled solutions for the way things are going in the future. When it comes to large scale, let me just tell you why I'm asking the question. Because Gareth here has asked, he said, there are a lot of videos on the internet about South African hunters shooting baboons and monkeys who are pests to farmers in the Eastern Cape, especially in the citrus area. Is that something that your guest's company gets involved with? I suppose that's a fair question.
Bamboo technology, the only technology we currently have from services side is noise frequencies. So we've partnered up having a certain frequency to deter baboons from the area. But unfortunately, baboons are a plague in South Africa. Falconcrest doesn't deal with baboons at all. The birds of prey, I think, are too small for those baboons we've got up here. And unfortunately, like you said, sometimes we spoke about it earlier, there is a culling requirement. They can destroy. I've seen the baboons come into fields and destroy everything. Like you said, it's
100%.
Unfortunately for the farmers' risk, they have to cull.
Dion, let's take our last break and our last ad break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. We need to wrap up. Dion, I'd love to sit down with you and have a cup of coffee or maybe something stronger towards the end of the day one day. It's just absolutely fascinating how something that you feel that you would just almost dismiss if it wasn't something that was plaguing you would, can become such a part of environment that people need to spend money, technologies need to be developed, research needs to be done around the world. But it also just reminds me again, on the internet, something that I've seen a lot just being involved in agriculture is this concept of wild pigs in America. If you take Texas, for example, a herd of wild boar can destroy an entire millet crop overnight. And again, it's not the bird eating the entire apple. It's just taking one peck that makes that apple absolutely useless. And unfortunately, if we allow these things to get out of control, then they become vermin and they become a problem. And you guys are just dealing with so much challenge because as the city grows and as cities in South Africa grow, unfortunately, maintenance is not there and the infrastructure starts to crumble. And it's just a hazardous place for these pests to really become a major, major problem. Just to end off with, where do you see the future going with pest control and how do you as a company is serviced feel that you'll be able to manage it going forward?
For me, poison is not always the solution. I think we need to start balancing wildlife conservation with also keeping in mind to protect human health, safety and assets. So we have to become much more responsible. And I know we need to look at our future. I saw your lovely grandchild. The future for poison is not necessarily the right method of following. We need to become much more held responsible and ethical in using these poison types. And for us as a company, a hygienic environment is what we try and strive for our customers and for our future partners out there.
Fantastic. Thank you, Dion. It's been absolutely fascinating to think we've been talking for nearly an hour about pigeons and hawks has been fascinating. Thank you. And again, anybody who's got any hassles in this area, whether you're a domestic area or you're a commercial or industrial, please be in touch with service. Ask for Dion and just get a solution that is going to work and that is going to evolve as time goes by so that you can keep things under control. Dion, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me, Avi, and I'm looking forward to meeting up with you for a coffee or something stronger.
Fantastic.
And thanks to your listeners for having me.
Great. Craig, as always, thanks for pushing the buttons. We will chat to you next week.